From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency. Welcome to Update One. On this podcast, we're featuring a writer who has had a major impact on the journalism community. I'm Mike Hempen, a co-chair of the Broadcast Podcast team. The guest is Noel Rubinton, a Press Club member who has a book coming out about John McPhee. It's titled, Looking for a Story, A Complete Guide to the Writings of John McPhee. Noel, welcome to Update One. Before we discuss your book, let's talk about your career. How did you reach this point in your career where you're writing about a writer who has inspired so many others?
So I've really been a journalist my whole life. I worked for Newsday for 31 years in New York and a lot of reporting and editing jobs. And then I've worked for nonprofits for the last 10 years, but I've always harbored the goal of writing a book. And I've had plenty of ideas and none of them quite caught fire. And this one really grabbed me and it worked out.
And you're writing it, of course, about John McPhee. He's been a writer for more than 70 years. He's 94 years old, and I know, as you said, he's still going strong. He's won a Pulitzer Prize along with many other awards. So obviously, he's been very successful in his career. What was your thinking when you decided to write a book about McPhee?
Well, I started reading John McPhee 55 years ago, when I was 14 years old. And so he's been part of the soundtrack of my life. He's had an enormous influence on me and my reading and my writing. And the idea just came to me a few years ago that I wanted to try to, out of gratitude to him, give back by exploring him more and making sure that kind of next generations were going to learn about him.
I know in your book you talk about the fact he's known for writing nonfiction, but you also say the structures and techniques he uses are more commonly associated with fiction writing. So how was he able to use those structures and techniques so successfully in the nonfiction world?
He's a tremendously creative writer. I think he's written close to 35 books, and I don't think any of them are the same structure. He always does it differently. His reporting process is like a reporter, but also like a novelist in the sense of his eye for detail. The way he describes people is incredible. So many of the things that he does are like you would think somebody was making it up, except in his case, it's pure fact.
Now, I know, though, you also pointed out that a lot of his works are not well known. Why is that?
Well, part of it is, you know, he's almost a victim of his own success. He's written so much that people couldn't keep track of it all. He's written all these books. He's written hundreds and hundreds of magazine articles, many for The New Yorker, where he's worked for 60 years, but also other magazines. So it's, you know, people have trouble following that much work. And that was really why I wanted to do this as a guide, to explore his work and to really put it in front of people where they could go to find great things.
Now, I know he wrote for Time magazine, too, before he went to The New Yorker. But at that time, there were no bylines, so people didn't realize when they were reading his articles that he had written them. But I know you have some excerpts of his work at Time.
So this was a real discovery. I went to the Time archive in New York, not knowing if I could kind of decode the magazines. And I found a way. Copy editors had, with grease pencils, marked the writer's initials for every story in Time magazine. And by going through thousands and thousands of pages of Time magazine, I found more than 500 stories that McPhee wrote in a very short period of time. And I've included about 75 highlights in that. And so these are going to be stories which people are going to read for the first time as McPhee stories. And I was going to just read a couple of short excerpts. One is he did 9 cover stories. He was on the showbiz beat, and he wrote about people like Richard Burton, Barbara Streisand, Sophia Loren. And here's what he wrote about Barbara Streisand when she rose to stardom in the 1964 Broadway musical Funny Girl. Streisand establishes more than a well-recollected Fanny Bryce. She establishes Barbara Streisand. When she is on stage, singing, mugging, dancing, loving, shouting, wiggling, grinding, wheedling, she turns the air around her into a cloud of tired ions. Her voice has all the colors, bright and subtle, that a musical play could ask for, and gradations of power, too. It pushes the walls out and it pulls them in. Just one other excerpt. This is very short, where he wrote about the great actor Anthony Quinn in 1964. This, I think, 1962. And I think this shows his power of description. He has a face like a bloodhound that has just eaten an escaped convict. How many people would come up with that idea? I mean, he's incredibly clever.
In your book, you also talk about his love of the English language, and you talk about that being part of his success.
Very much so. He just loves the sound of words, and he got this from his father, and he has developed a habit starting in high school of reading aloud everything he writes, and hopefully to another person, but sometimes to himself. And I think the apogee of this was a book in 1971 called Encounters with the Archdruid, which McPhee had read serially to his editor over the telephone all 60,000 words. Wow. Because he uses that as a way to correct himself. Because when he hears it, he can hear flaws which you can't tell when you're reading it over on a page.
You read the excerpts from Time magazine, no bylines. He was there for 8 years. Was that a common practice back then?
It was that Henry Luce, who was the founder of Time magazine, believed in this idea of group journalism and that it was kind of an anonymous collective. And so it wasn't until, I think, till mid to late 70s that they had bylines in Time magazine. So all his compatriots were anonymous too. And he was there with people like Calvin Trillin, with all sorts of people who went on to interesting things, because it was really a proving ground for writers, Time magazine.
But he then goes to The New Yorker, and was that his ideal job, his dream job?
That was his goal since he was about 10 years old. And he said he wallpapered many rooms with the rejections he got from The New Yorker over the years. And finally, he broke through when he did a classic profile of Bill Bradley, the basketball player at Princeton, in 1965, which became his first book. And he was hired as a staff writer. And he's been there ever since.
Bill Bradley from Crystal City, Missouri, then the Princeton and the New York Knicks. And the rest is then the Senate, right? And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the fact that McPhee taught at Princeton for 50 years, that's incredible. I know he influenced hundreds of students over that time. Talk about some of the big names that he played a role in their success.
Oh, he taught 544 students. He kept track of them. And he taught people like David Remnick, who's been the editor of The New Yorker for now more than 25 years, Rick Stengel, who was managing editor of Time magazine, went on to become an undersecretary of state. Jim Kelly, another person like that. Jennifer Weiner, who's a best-selling novelist. Poets, all sorts of people. So his students have produced hundreds of books. And I had a particularly moving day one day when I went to his academic office. And all you could see were bookcases filled with books from his students, which they had sent to him with inscriptions of gratitude.
This is an incredible amount of work that you've put together, this book of yours. How long did it take to research and write?
Well, the whole process was just under 4 years, including the production process. The research and writing part took about 2 years. And as somebody who had a background in daily journalism, this was pretty crazy. You know, I used to think that having 4 hours was a lot of time. But to have to pace yourself and figure it out, I went to about a dozen libraries. I made a trip out to Los Angeles to see a video of something that McPhee had done. So it was all sorts of really great reporting, but it took a long time.
Did you decide right away to write this book? In other words, when the thought entered your mind, was it a slam dunk? Or did you have to think about it knowing it would be a lot of work?
No. So, again, I've been looking for an idea for a while. And I was actually packing up an apartment in Providence, Rhode Island, getting ready to move to Washington. And one day when I packed the box, this idea came into my head. There was nothing in the box about McPhee. And I knew right away that's what I wanted to do. And it was, eventually I got to him and he was tremendously enthusiastic about helping. And without his cooperation, the book wouldn't be anything like what it is.
What was the feeling like when you had completed the book?
Kind of surreal, because I'm having to imagine it really being done. And, the process is really – the publishing process is a complicated one, many steps, and I had a lot to learn. And it's been fabulous. Princeton University Press is my publisher, and they've done just a great job.
What about your book tour? I know you have that coming up. If you can talk about where it begins and some of the places
it's starting in Princeton, New Jersey, fittingly, because that's kind of been McPhee's home for his whole life, on May 15th. And I'm going from there to Philadelphia, and I'm going to New York City. I'm going to Providence, Rhode Island, coming back here to Washington, D.C. And in almost all those cases, I'm going to be in conversation with distinguished former students of McPhee because, A, they're really bright people, but I also thought that would be another way to show his legacy. So, for example, here in Washington, you know, Mark Fisher from The Washington Post is going to be in conversation with me at Politics and Prose.
It's an outstanding book about an incredible career, the career of John McPhee. How can people go about getting your book?
Well, as I say, your local bookseller or online. I hope it'll be on sale everywhere. I hope people will see it because I really want people, even if they've never read anything by John McPhee, I'm hoping that they're going to see this and find things to really dive into. It's such an incredible world that he's created.
This will be quite an education for them.
I hope so.
The guest has been Noel Rubinten, talking about his book, Looking for a Story, A Complete Guide to the Writings of John McPhee. I'm Mike Hempen. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.